Blog Talk Radio.
Become a member of the Movie Geeks United family. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/moviegeeksunite, Facebook at facebook.com/moviegeeksunited, YouTube at youtube.com/moviegeeksunited, or bookmark our website at moviegeeksunited.net. And you can also access our entire library of programs, including more than 600 filmmaker interviews, right here on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/moviegeeksunited. It is Oscar night. We are 2 hours away from the big ceremony, and red carpet arrivals are going to start taking place any minute now. And this is the Movie Geeks United Oscar pre-show, where we're going to discuss last-minute thoughts on what we expect from the ceremony and last-minute predictions, see if our feelings have changed in these last hours before the big event. How are you guys doing? How are you guys feeling about tonight?
Oh, you know, I mean, it's very exciting, you know. There are obviously some locks, but I don't even know in those locked categories, I think there's room for an upset.
Yeah, I keep trying to prepare myself for something that's going to just make me spit out my chicken wings or whatever while I'm watching this.
That's what we want, folks. There you go. There's an image that you want. Dean spitting out food. There you go.
It's a chicken
wing
spitting barometer. I give this,
I give this a five.
Yeah. So let me ask you both. Take out your crystal ball. Tell me what you expect to be saying about tonight's ceremony when we do our post Oscar show.
Well, I don't particularly find Seth MacFarlane funny, so, I'm not a big fan of his work just in general, so I'm not sure how I'm going to react to his. I'm keeping an open mind, though. I mean, you know, like if he's good, then I'll, and I know that he's musically talented, too, so I hope that I'm saying that I was surprised at how good he is.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think he's a logical choice because I think what the interesting thing about Seth MacFarlane is he's sort of one-up Howard Stern in the King of All Media and Oprah in that regard. He's got these successful TV shows. Now, say what you will about it. I'm not the biggest fan, you know, Family Guy or, you know, American Dad or what's the other one, The Cleveland Show. But there's a show that was Family Guy was canceled, then came back. And he's, like, reinvented himself, and he made the Ted, which was very funny, very silly, but very funny. But he's very bright. And I think he's a natural choice for this because, let's be very honest, with the exception of Jon Stewart, and that was a bold choice at the time, but he's too smart, too cerebral for that kind of show. And he, you know what? It's like having Rolling Stone or David Letterman, too, host your show. It's just they make fun of these people. They make fun of these people that you're supposed to be celebrating. It's not the smartest choice in the world. Seth MacFarlane is smack dab in the middle of this industry. He represents the best, and he also represents what I would like to refer to as a 21st century performer like Joseph Gordon-Levitt or someone like that. He can do everything. He can multitask. He is what we talk about. He is very essentially a 21st century man. He does everything, and you sort of need to do that to survive in today's world as it is. So I think he's perfect.
Well, I think that
Joseph Gordon-Levitt can do everything. I mean,
he can direct, he can sing, he can dance, and he can act, and he can write. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is like, let me be something. We should all be ashamed of ourselves that we're not that talented, that we don't have that kind of talent. I mean, he does everything. Do you know what hit record is? Dean?
Uh-uh.
Okay, no. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Well, I think it will call upon his musical abilities tonight, definitely. And don't forget, he's also a nominee tonight. But
yeah.
They're not ending the show with Best Picture. I mean, they're going to announce Best Picture, but then they have a musical number with Seth MacFarlane and Kristen Chenoweth, that big movie star Kristen Chenoweth. So
that would have been my.
So I mean, they're ending with a musical number. It's going to be a tribute to musicals during the thing. Barbara Streisand's coming back. Adele's singing Skyfall for the first time publicly. So it's going to be a big musical feast tonight, I think.
Wow, it's her first performance of that anywhere? Like,
yeah,
wow.
I don't think she's ever done it. No, she's never done it live, so that's something. I mean, right there, that's a smart thing to get people to tune in. I thought that was a very, very genius stroke right there.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I was just watching some of the red carpet stuff, which, you know, kind of makes me ill a little watching that stuff because it's all about fashion and everything, and I'm not really interested in fashion. Or not at all, really.
Can I ask you something, Dean, about that? Because that's an interesting thing you bring up. I used to be that way when I was much younger. But I think that fashion, that red carpet, while we may mock it and joke about it, that's the very essence of what people tune in to see. It represents
a lot
glamour. And glamour. Glamour is very important. I know we want to think of artsy farts or whatever. No, it's about glamour. We love this. Whether we want to admit it or not.
I am into seeing them and what they look like and all that kind of stuff. That's cool.
No, but I mean,
but
fashion is an integral part of motion pictures in a sense.
Talk about fashion.
That I agree with. I think that gets
forgetting about the fashion.
We're getting lectured by Kelly Osbourne, who I was telling Jamie earlier. We're getting lectured by her. Yes, I agree. That is part of the problem. But fashion in itself, oh, my God. I mean, the amount of – if you wanted to solve the sequester on Friday, you just – what everyone's wearing, that could solve our budget problems in 2 minutes. I mean, the amount of money that is on that red carpet.
When did that start? I mean, did that –
That start – God forbid it start – it might start Friday.
No. In the history of the Oscars, when did fashion become the main, I guess, when there are all these cameras there on the red carpet?
And cameras, also all the designers.
Started, you know when it really started, I think, was just the start of the entertainment television revolution.
That might be it, but, fashion itself, though, I mean, just, if you go look at it, especially the old French films, you see all the great the French fashion designers who do the wardrobe on, like, Children. I think it's just this intersection that's fascinating to me.
Hollywood has always been, like, the mecca of fashion. I mean, a lot of designers want to work in Hollywood, especially since the whole world is going to see what they make for them.
Right,
yeah. Great advertisement for them. But I do think you're right. There's been even greater emphasis with entertainment television, and the fact that entertainment television is so much television is so superficial. The fashion is like perfect for them to cover.
Yeah, oh, it is. Then you got Joan and her daughter tomorrow night will be crucifying everyone.
Yeah, it's like a blood sport.
It is.
In some way, yeah.
That's the part of it that I don't like. I like seeing everybody show up, and I even like the sort of red carpet thing that happens like 30 minutes before the show. But, you know, now they're doing like the red carpet thing. Like I started watching it today like at 3:30 or whatever. So they've got the lower end kind of commentators on, and they just kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
It's like 24-hour news anyway. When you're covering something, I mean, E! Started running stuff like at 1 or 1:30, you know, 6.5 or so hours before the actual event.
Well, it's like
when
the
you're
Super
covering
Bowl.
When you're covering something like that, you have to fill it with so much nonsense to fill the time.
There's no real news.
Is there's no talk about the movies or anything.
Right.
My impression of the people who are talking about the fashion is that they haven't even seen one of the movies. Like, you know, that's just my
I was watching Meet the Press this morning. I've become like an old man. I'm like waking up early and watching Meet the Press every Sunday. But that was on, and they had a segment about the Oscars on that. And at first they started talking about, you know, I guess we got to stop talking serious politics for a while and put on our dummy hats and start predicting the Oscars. But then you could tell that they really got into it. It was like the most.
Well, Chris Matthews is definitely on his shows is getting, he can't stop talking about it.
Going back and forth about the merits of each of these films, and they all have different predictions. And that's something, too, whenever we see, you know, like certain magazines do, like the secret ballots, like this Hollywood insider, a member of the Academy, let us in on his thinking process when he fills out his ballot. You know, a couple.
Oh, the Hollywood Reporter, the thing in the Hollywood Reporter this weekend.
Who was that?
Entertainment Weekly does the same thing, and they're all over the map. I mean, I don't know when something wins Best Picture or anything. How much of an overwhelming consensus is it? I mean, seeing the percentages of votes would be incredibly fascinating.
Oh, that would be a great thing to see.
Because
that thing in the Hollywood Reporter reminded me of the Bill Murray on Saturday Night Live skit when he picked the Oscars. This was in the late 70s when Star Wars came out. And he would give his rationale. Star Wars, it's on a small screen in Kansas. I had no idea what was going on. I forget who he picked his best picture, but I mean, it reminded me of that. Just reading this guy's comments was hysterical.
Remember
the industry.
Remember how Bill Murray used to get to the supporting actor and supporting actress things, and he just tossed them away. Nobody cares about me.
it was classic, though. I mean. But that's what that reminded me of. But I don't. I would love to know who that was, because that was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great article. That was great. I thought he was right on the money in a lot of the things he had to say. I mean, not in all of them, because he didn't like them more. And I guess
he sounded very bitter. Is what he sounded like, a true person in the industry, incredibly bitter. And which is, I think, you know, you have to be in that. And I don't know how else you can survive in it. And it's been very bitter, very jealous, and so I believe it was authentic just on the on those terms alone. It was just amazing, the bitter. You could just hear. You can imagine what this guy sounds like. I mean,
right.
Oh, my God.
Well,
he was obviously a director, so, I mean, because he said that he had directed, you know, he mentioned that he had a career in directing in that article.
Oh, my God, it was Uwe Boll. Oh, my God, it must have been him.
Well, we have mentioned Seth MacFarlane.
I predict William Friedkin.
Oh, could have been. We mentioned Seth MacFarlane earlier. Here's a clip of him on Good Morning America the other day. And you could tell he wasn't very articulate during the interview. He was probably completely exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know everybody associated with the ceremony tonight are working round-the-clock hours, mm-hmm. and not getting any sleep. But here's what they got out of him, a little brief minute-long clip.
Marker. Hi, I'm Seth MacFarlane.
It is Hollywood's biggest night, and as a first-time Oscar host, potentially 1 billion eyes around the world will be on leading man Seth MacFarlane.
Have you thought about what the critics are going to write?
Oh, yeah. No matter what I do, I'm going in at minus 10. I have to kind of claw and scratch a little bit for even a decent review.
Do you have a favorite host as you look back?
You know, I think Johnny Carson is probably the gold standard. I thought that Letterman did not get a fair shake. I thought Letterman was really funny.
They like to assign superlatives to different hosts. What do you think?
I've noticed they like
to
assign
superlatives
to some people.
What is going to be? What's yours going to be?
Most astonishingly, dazzlingly mediocre.
He is not only a host, but is also a nominee, nominated for this original song from Ted.
Everybody needs a best friend. Congratulations. How do you feel about that?
I'm actually genuinely, you know, I know we're going to lose to Adele, but I'm genuinely excited.
You know you're going to lose, but have you rehearsed a speech just in case?
No, no.
He does have a few other Oscar predictions.
Who's going to show more leg than Angelina Jolie did last year?
Academy President Hawk Koch.
Okay. I think he's right.
So there's a 7-second delay far as I know, at the Oscars. Do you think they're going to need it?
They might. You never know.
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, wasn't it last year? Was it last year where the guys that won the screenplay for The Descendants came up and dropped an S bomb or something?
Oh, possibly. I don't quite recall that. I remember Melissa Leo.
Yeah, she did.
I remember hearing that was the first time a nominee ever did that, dropped the F bomb during an acceptance speech.
I expected Daniel Day Lewis to go up there and say, "Fuck me, three actor Oscars."
Yeah,
that's
no,
very,
I mean,
very presidential.
that's what. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, that would be.
But it's shocking. I mean, to my knowledge, they've never had to bleep a host.
Didn't Richard Pryor host it one time or something like that? Like he was one of five co-hosts or something like that. There might have been something in there. I'm not sure.
You know, it's kind of, I think I said this last show or a prior show that I did. It's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because
yeah.
Jerry, you made mention of ridiculing the crowd that you're addressing.
Yeah,
but the larger crowd are the billion people watching worldwide, and
yes.
and their opinion is, you know, I think they want to hear some of that, but there is a place where you go where you go too far. There's like a Ricky Gervais place, and that's not the Oscars. That's not indicative of the spirit of the Oscars. But
right.
without some kind of good natured ribbing, I think the monologues would be pretty weak.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah,
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, all we have to do is look at this year's Golden Globes. That, I mean, everyone seems to want Amy Poehler and Tina Fey to host everything, and I have to
say, I agree.
I have to say, that was one of the best decisions in recent memory. Not that I did not have a problem with Ricky Gervais at all, but obviously a lot of people did. Even Andy McFarlane said, you know, the best of these was Johnny Carson. He was the best at this, and I don't think there's anyone who will. I don't know if anyone will ever be that good again.
And Carson was, I mean, which is unusual, because the fault of David Letterman in a lot of people's eyes was that he decided to essentially bring his show to the Oscars instead of you know doing what he should have done, which is just accommodate. His particular gifts for the Oscars. I mean, he kind of did it backwards, and a lot of people thought that was a weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the thing about Carson is, you know, Carson, I mean, even on his show when he was on television, you know, I mean, he was incredibly classy and respectful,
yeah.
and still remained funny and irreverent.
Right.
So he kind of just – Carson was able to walk that tightrope, and I think Letterman would be the first person to tell you that there's no way that he'd be able to do that like Carson. You know.
Right,
that's
right.
That's why Carson was his idol. So.
Well, I mean, Letterman got pretty smashed up from his hosting duties, and I think this was 1995 because it was the Pulp Fiction. But I thought that he came up with a couple of good zingers. Here are two of them.
As you know, of course, tonight is the night that celebrates the phrase, "It's an honor just to be nominated." Here's the good news. Losers tonight will not go home empty-handed. In fact, all nominees in the Best Actress category will get the opportunity to have a child with Anthony Quinn. So there you go. You can't. One of the pictures nominated tonight for Best Foreign Film, as you know, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. Coincidentally, as I understand it, this is also how Arnold Schwarzenegger asked Maria Shriver out on their first date.
So that's a good line.
No, those are both very good lines. I mean,
yeah, they are.
It was the Uma Oprah thing. I mean, you know, which
yeah.
is kind of a dumb thing to, like, get after him about, you know.
It's typical, Letterman humor, you know, the song.
Yeah, no,
like,
it really was. So, I mean, I had no problem with it. I thought it was, I didn't think he did a bad job. I mean, I thought that was ridiculous. So.
How important is the host to ensuring a good show, though?
Should we ask James Franco? Ooh. Well, I mean, for me, you know, I mean, the host duty is pretty much over after the first 20 minutes. So,
yeah.
But I will say this. I've always, one of the things that's made Billy Crystal always kind of a good host is that he's able to come up with some pretty, he's pretty quick on his feet. So when something happens on the stage, and he comes back to on stage to announce the next person, he always has a pretty sharp quip to impart. But, you know, it's, I don't know how much the writers, you know, like Bruce Valanche and all those guys have to do with those lines. I suspect that sometimes they have a lot to do with it. But that's one of his strengths, you know. I have to say, Whoopi Goldberg could get off a couple of good lines from here from time to time too. So
Jessica Chastain just arrived on the red carpet. She's talking to Dick Clark 2.0, Ryan Seacrest, and she's attending with her mother, it appears. So tell me what you think. I had a question in mind, and I just lost it because I'm staring at Jessica Chastain. You can understand.
Yes, I can see that. Just the blinding, you know, pale skin and everything.
Do you think how far over 3 hours do you think the ceremony is going to run tonight?
I do think if they're talking about putting all this stuff in there, I think we are looking at least 3.5-4 hour show. I mean,
I don't think so.
There's talk. I mean, if you're putting all these things in there.
Yeah,
and you have the commercials too, and that's the most important part on network television is the commercials. The hell with the actual content, but commercials are why you have TV. Then you know it's going to be a long show.
I
think the longest one to date so far is just 3 hours and 36 minutes or something like that. So
I think it could easily run over. But here's the thing about that. You know what will make it run over?
The music sequences.
No, the acceptance speeches.
Oh.
Because like any show on network TV, they've timed everything out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they know how long it's going to last with all the variables that they're in control of.
Right.
The one thing that they're not necessarily are the acceptance speeches if they don't stop talking after 45 seconds.
Right.
You know.
That
agitates me.
They only accept the speeches they let. It does me too. But the only ones they let go longer are the acting things. I mean, they're definitely ready to get the editing guys off the stage, so you know they'll play them off easy. But the acting.
But it agitates
acting,
me that they plan everything to a T and they fill up the show and then but they completely shortchange the nominees and the winners'
right.
acceptance speeches. You know, the most memorable moments. 9 times out of 10 won't be any produced material. They'll be the spontaneous
right.
moments.
Mm-hmm. Like Michael Moore's acceptance speech, I mean, back in about 10 years ago. So, I mean,
I still remember being so furious when Martin Landau won for Ed Wood, and I was just so thrilled, and, you know, and he was up there, and he'd been in the business 50 years, you know, been nominated 3 times before or whatever, and then he finally wins, and then they have the nerve to start playing him off, and he's like, wait, you know, oh, come on, that's embarrassing, oh, come on, guys.
Yeah, right.
You know, and when he did win, I remember Samuel Jackson saying the curse word. That you just saw him mouth the curse word because the audio was off. But Samuel Jackson wasn't pleased about losing to.
No, he wasn't.
He still talks about
yes,
it.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
He's still mad
you
about
know,
it.
And, but that's the same with a lot. I remember Sinatra got an award at the Grammys before he died, and they played him off. Sinatra at the Grammys. I remember that. And when I was watching that, I was thinking, you got to be kidding me. Like they started playing him off, and then they cut to a commercial break in the middle of his acceptance. Can you imagine? Oh
so
my God!
Stupid.
Yeah, terribly
can't
stupid.
Stand it.
And here's another question. Tony Macklin, our good friend, I've been going back and forth with him. He's, you know, I'm saying, like a lot of people are saying, that this could potentially be an unpredictable year, and he doesn't think so. But Tony consults, like, the moneymakers, the people that bet on the Oscars and what their favorites are and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he did bring up a good point, because I brought up the categories that were a big question mark, and he said, you know, you're paying attention to the critics and the writers out there and not necessarily.
Right.
But there is something, like, because De Niro hasn't won an award this season. Steven Spielberg hasn't won an award this season, to my knowledge.
Right.
And yet both of those have been talked about as favorites all of a sudden and very recently. How much of that is manufactured? How much of that is just speculation that becomes rumor, that's just in the wind, that then becomes the common accepted knowledge?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, it is critics and writers who, you know, but I don't know mind of the – well, let me ask you this. Let me ask, who won the DGA? Ben Affleck. Oh, wait, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, God, well, that throws a whole ringer in this one. I wasn't aware. When was that announced? I probably remember when it was. But when was that announced? How many?
2 or 3 weeks ago.
Okay, that's probably why I don't remember. I thought it was usually closer to the – okay. Okay, that throws a whole ringer. I mean, best director here is up for grabs. I mean, even though I've heard Spielberg mentioned in many places, Nate Silver, I think, mentioned is predicting that he will win, and he's never wrong about anything. But
some are going for Ang Lee, you know, because I would give it to Ang Lee. Liza Pai is probably going to walk away tonight with the most awards. Even if Ang Lee doesn't win Best Director, it's probably still going to walk away with 4 or 5 technical awards.
It could very well do that. I think Ang Lee. I think the Best Director is I wouldn't be surprised. We're looking at like a Silver Linings Playbook sweep, though, in some categories. Though, I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if David O. Russell wins Best Director tonight.
I think
you know what?
Russell
could. I mean, if it's not Spielberg, on Twitter, we're going to be live tweeting the Oscars all night, and we've already got up a lot of trivia about the Oscars. And tonight could really be a series of triple wins for a lot of people. One of the things that we tweeted about, if you think about it, Spielberg would win his third tonight if he were to win. Of course, Day-Lewis is third. Sally Field is up for her third win. Denzel Washington would be a third win.
True,
And there's somebody else. I mean, and it's interesting because the Best Actress category, which is another thing, Emmanuel Riva all of a sudden is talked about as a favorite.
Right.
And that's relatively new. I mean, she wasn't out of the race.
You know, I mean, when she finally came out and said, well, I mean, the news was that, you know, of course, today is her birthday, her 86th birthday. So this is also her first time in L.A. ever.
Right.
Maybe just the sort of like the gathering notion that, you know, Jennifer Lawrence is going to be up there a lot more times in the future, but this might be Riva's only chance. And plus, maybe they'll lend some gravitas to the event. And then finally, you know, her getting the Oscar from Jean Dujardin, you know, who will be giving away the Best Actress Oscar tonight.
Right.
Would also be something interesting. So all those things kind of dovetailing together, I think, you know, happened towards the latter part of this the voting process. And
none of those actresses up for Best Actress has ever won an Oscar before.
Right.
Meanwhile, the Best Supporting Actor category, which is, I'm terribly fascinated by that category. All of them have won Oscars before. De Niro, that would be a third Oscar for De Niro. That was the one I was missing.
Right, okay.
And that's quite possible.
And they're all great performances, too. Let's not make, each of those performances is rock solid.
Nobody's been talking about De Niro until he started crying. Or is that just me?
No, not a bit. When he got on Teddy Kirk and actually cried, you know, he didn't
remember.
Say a whole lot on that show, but he just, you know, when he got the first question, you know, he was just a mess. So
it's so much like politics, because I remember watching that documentary by the People, which is the documentarians that followed Barack Obama in 2008, and they had no idea he would end up winning, but it followed that campaign. And then late in the campaign, I mean, it's neck and neck between he and Hillary, and Hillary starts crying at a public event.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama's people are like, uh-oh, this could be a game changer.
Yeah.
It's a lot like that.
It is. Well, it is all political, you know, this process, you know. That's why they call it an Oscar campaign. That's why they are out there campaigning, you know, and some years, you know, it seems like the campaigning this year has been a lot. I mean, I know that they do it every year, but it seems like the campaigning this year has been overboard, you know, like, you know, a couple of, what did they do last week where they, the Warner Brothers bought a 30-minute time slot on a major network to do a 30-minute Argo
You have two films being slimed. Lincoln has been, there's a backlash against Lincoln coming from Maureen Dowd, of all people, last week. And then the thing with Zero Dark Thirty, which is just getting out of hand. I really do think politicians and op-ed columnists should just shut up.
Argo and
movies.
Lincoln have spent about the same amount of money campaigning this Oscar season. I read that today, and we're talking, you know, $80-100 million.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of. I mean, it's a lot of money to throw around. I mean, just a lot of money.
Yes.
Amazing.
If Emmanuel Riva were to win tonight, she'd become the ninth person in history to earn an Oscar for performance in a foreign language. But she is also up against Quvenzhané Wallace, who gave her performance in Beasts of the Southern Wild when she was six.
Mm-hmm.
She's nine now. And it was just announced today that she is going to star in the musical remake of Annie. And I think a remake of Annie could be huge, actually.
It's true, because she didn't quite do it right the first time, right? So
It was interesting, but it wasn't, you know, it's not something we really talk about. This is an interesting take on it, so I'd be very curious to see that. And I hope that this actress has a long future. I don't know if a win, I mean, her performance, I mean, the whole movie is just breathtaking, but I don't know if a win at such a young age, I mean, that's heavy stuff. I mean,
that's you
heavy.
Know what a curse,
I mean,
because there's a big actress curse, too.
Oh, I mean.
So you don't want to curse a nine-year-old, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look with Tatum O'Neill. I mean, just ask John McEnroe about that. You know.
But there has been Anna Paquin, so, you know.
Well, Anna Paquin, and then she disappeared, True Blood gave her this, like, huge resurgence, which is, I mean, and more power to her, because, you know, she made some interesting movies after The Piano, and she's made some very interesting movies, obviously, after True Blood. But it's one of those things, though. I mean, I was just reading this thing about child actresses the other day in the Washington Post, and they really don't understand the enormity, they'll say, what they're doing at the time. They have no idea. Mm-hmm. They really don't understand, and when it does hit them when they're much older, it's like, wow, I did that.
Well, a lot of them too depend upon good family, and unfortunately for a lot of these young child actors, their parents or whoever it might be, are the ones that want to be famous. and
yeah.
use their child as a surrogate, you know. So it also depends upon the healthiness of their family situation.
Mr. Lohan.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think Lindsay will be up for the Canyons next year. But
well, I think for Razzie, definitely.
The Razzies were announced. So the last Twilight, I guess, won the Razzie last night.
They gave it. Twilight swept the board, it sounds like.
Well, good. Well, that's an accomplishment.
And then meanwhile, they also had the Independent Spirits last night, and that great independent movie, Silver Linings Playbook, with huge stars in it.
That was Harvey's masterwork. You know, going in there. I mean, he at least has that. Wow.
But seriously, I mean, like, when are we going to get? Are we ever going to return to the days of, like, you know, things like, you know, Stranger Than Paradise winning best picture at the Independent Spirit Awards?
It's just not that,
like,
kind,
you know,
of environment
after
anymore.
Hours or something.
It's not that kind of environment anymore. I mean, you just don't have that clear line. And I mean, I don't begrudge Silver Linings Playbook for, you know, it was a three-way race between that, Moonrise Kingdom, and Beast of the Southern Wild. And I think Beast of the Southern Wild only got one thing, cinematography. I don't know if Moonrise Kingdom got anything.
Well, and I don't know if it was independently financed, Silver Linings. I'm sure it stayed within the regulations of what constitutes an independent
film. It's weird, though. It's a weird thing,
murky.
Though.
It seems murky, doesn't it? But the Independent Spirit Awards, they still nominated something like Beast of the Southern Wild, and more importantly, something like Keep the Lights On, which is a movie I haven't heard of. And so that was front and center in a lot of categories last night. De Niro, if he were to win tonight for Silver Linings Playbook, it would be his third win, but he has not won. The person that's considered widely as one of cinema's greatest actors, he has not won an Oscar since 1980. And he has been nominated since 1991. So, you know, a big factor in his possible win tonight will be he's due. And thank God he did something that isn't crap and actually gave a meaningful performance. I mean, I think that's a kind of an encouragement to stay on that path, even though he's not, because he's doing Stallone's next movie. But right now, it's a
that was a shock when I saw that photo of Stallone and De Niro in the boxing
ring.
Yeah, I
mean,
I
you said something interesting. You said, and it is something that we use this word, that they're due. That they're due. And it seems like the same kind of thinking that the Republican presidential candidates use for their nominees. It's because they're due, like McCain or Romney. It's just they become the de facto nominees. So I do think, though, De Niro does give a great performance in this film.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about
and
that.
And he does.
And
yeah.
it is rare. And it is rare to see that. I mean, then after Cape Fear, he gave still several great performances, some of his best, Casino and Heat.
Oh, yeah, Casino, Heat, This Boy's Life. He's done some great work. You know what, though? I mean, timing is a lot. And they say it how they break into the business, too, you know. Luck, timing, right place, right time, shaking the right hands, meeting the right people. I mean, timing accounts for a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's going to come down. I personally think that he's going to win.
Well, Roger Deakins has been nominated 10 times, never won.
I think it's his year, though. I think it is his
year. The timing right here.
Well, one thing, you know, that on the ballots, they don't have the nominees' names so there's a possibility that he won't win this year because I think almost everybody knows that Deakins is talking about somebody who's due. And I think almost everybody knows that he's due. But it might be if his name isn't listed on the ballots, like none of the names are listed on the ballots, then I think there might be like some kind of confusion. Like people might forget that he was actually nominated for this.
It could be. But
that's a good point. That's a very good point.
The favorite here is probably Claudio Miranda for Life of Pi. The whole thing about what is practical, what is digital effects, is kind of has been clouded the past couple of years. And they made an extraordinary-looking film in Life of Pi.
And let's be honest. I mean, before, you know, when I read the book 10 years ago, and I'll be honest, I didn't think, I didn't know, at that 10 years ago, I had no idea how you would ever make this into a movie. So
right.
I do think there is something to be, you know, said for that. And I do think it, for every technical thing, it's a beautiful, very life-affirming movie. It deserves more than it's been nominated for, but I don't know if the momentum is there in the major, major categories.
Well, if Ang Lee were to win, that would probably explain his win, because it's an unfolding book. But, you know, he'd be the first Asian American, the first and only Asian American winner since he last won for Crouching
mm-hmm.
Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Was Life of Pi nominated for the Screenplay Award, too? Was it nominated for Adapted?
Adapted? I'm not sure. I don't know. Oh, God, if it gets it for...
Both screenplay categories are going to be fascinating because they're all good. I mean, adapted, won't that go to, we think, Tony Kushner for Lincoln?
I'm pulling out the ballot. Hang on.
Remember the Academy?
Life of Pi was nominated for Adapted, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what I thought. Now it seems like Argo is the lead, you know, it's the presumed winner. It's also, you know, possible that, you know, Kushner, who's been in the lead for all this time, but lost the WGA award to Chris Terrio for Argo. Now it's looking like Argo, the screenplay for Argo, is going to be swept along, you know, with the Best Picture win and probably an editing win as well. So,
Lincoln seemed like the major front runner for a long time.
Well, Lincoln seemed like the major front runner for a very long time. Even before all this, I mean, remember we thought the Master would be the front runner like 6 months ago. But I don't begrudge Argo winning if it wins, when it wins. I can't begrudge it. I think it's a very well-made film. So I can't begrudge
anything. It would be a shock if it doesn't win. I mean, because how all of the cards have been stacked in its favor, for whatever reason. But how about a tie? Do you think that a tie is possible in any of these categories, and which ones would you think it would be a possibility in?
Oh, God.
Best actress? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
How long has it been since we had a tie? We had Katharine Hepburn, but we had a tie.
Yeah, Katharine Hepburn. Well, I mean, you know, there's been ties in lesser categories, you know, like, Best Short Film. I know that had a tie, 10 or 12 years ago. But yes, as far as an acting thing, 68 for Lion Winner for Katharine Hepburn and Funny Girl for Barbara Streisand. And the interesting thing about that is there's been some, I don't know how they found this out, but if you think about that, okay, Barbara Streisand, just 6 months before her win, was accepted into the Academy that year. So if she hadn't been accepted into the Academy, and one presumes that she voted for herself, if she hadn't been accepted into the Academy, then Katharine Hepburn, there wouldn't have been a tie. Isn't that an interesting thought?
Yeah. It is interesting because it's been so long since we've had a tie. That would be something else. That would be an exciting moment.
Mm-hmm.
That would make for a very memorable show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also Tommy Lee Jones, who we can't discount for possibly winning Best Supporting Actor. I mean, some of these races are like not at all sure things. So I don't know why people talk as if they are.
I don't think any of it's sure. I mean, because they're all, I mean, you know, because if you look who's voting and you look at all the other things, it's all different people voting, different groups of people voting. So it isn't a sure thing. I mean, I think foreign film is going to be interesting. I think No is going to win personally, but What? I didn't know.
Well, some people are saying like the guy that did the ballot for that we were talking about in the Hollywood Reporter. He actually went with Contiki because he said that's the only film that actually leaves you with an uplifting feeling.
Because
remember the year everyone thought Amelie would win and No Man's Land won. Everyone thought, what was it the year that the Burnt by the Sun won, and everyone thought that that category routinely has, you know, surprises, big surprises.
Yeah.
You know. I would not be surprised if Haneke doesn't win that. I'm still predicting he's going to win, or that film is going to win. Which that's weird to me. I just learned this year that the Oscar for Best Foreign Film doesn't go to the director or the producer. It goes to the country. So what does that mean? It's like the Oscar for, you know, the Oscar for whatever Z or whatever is in some consulate in Greece or something? Where is
it? Well, let me say if it's in Greece, they're going to pawn that. They're going to go on eBay and pawn that shit to get some money for it, okay?
That's true.
And if is Chile, right? Well, I think they're economically okay, but if Spain had a film or Ireland, oh, they're going to pawn that. Oh, my God, they're going to pawn that as soon as possible.
That's funny.
Who are the most nominated people in history?
Randy Newman. Well,
no.
It's got to be Walt Disney, right?
He's number one. 59 nominations for
Walt
Disney.
Then you got to get John Williams in there.
He's number two. He's got 48, including tonight.
Wow.
Who is third place?
Well, it's not Billy Wilder, is it?
No.
It's not Buck Henry.
Is it Woody Allen?
It is Woody Allen, yeah. Woody Allen has something like 28 or something, I think.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Interestingly,
amazing.
Spielberg is third or fourth place in the most nominated directors list. And yet no actor has ever won for a Spielberg film. And you know who the number one director is? I posted this, so you guys probably do. But the number one most winning director.
Well, yeah, I've known this for a long time, but yeah, it's John Ford, right?
Yes. Yeah.
He won four.
He won four. He was nominated five times. He won four of them.
And only one of them won Best Picture, though, which was How Green Was My Valley. The others were just, That's interesting, too, you know.
Do you think, and by the way, we're going to do a show on The Searchers pretty soon.
I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because there's this thing going around that Tarantino like threw John Ford under the bus. I don't think he really means that. I think he just says that for shock value. Because in Kill Bill and Inglourious Basterds, there are a number of door frame shots that pay homage to The Searchers.
Right.
That's true. Definitely in Inglourious Basterds, for sure.
And also in Kill Bill Volume 2, and there's a ton of those. As much as he wants to be hip and cool, he does like John Ford, regardless of what he may say or think. He really does love. I mean, you can't not – everyone loves The Searchers. Everyone, Scorsese, Coppola. I mean, you just look at that film. There's a door shot. I'm sorry. I mean, that
comes
from The
Searchers. Well, I've
been
reading a book on the making of The Searchers this week because we interview the author tomorrow, and it's interesting how that movie was kind of came and went when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fascinating movie.
Yeah.
It was a financial flop.
Who among the nominees tonight – here's someone who's had a ton of nominations and no wins. 16 Oscar nominations, zero wins. Sound mixer Greg P. Russell. He is up tonight for Skyfall, and it's quite possible that he'll win. For that.
I love that Skyfall is getting this love.
But he could follow the same. That Roger Deakins might have, happen. And then of course there's also, if you think about this, with Deakins nominated for Skyfall, and then Greg Russell nominated for Skyfall, and then Thomas Newman nominated for that movie. And how many times has he lost? He's lost like 11 times or something.
Well, yeah, and his family has between them. Thomas Newman's family's name has 50 some odd total.
Yeah.
Names. It's amazing.
Well, I think he deserves it. I do like the Skyfall score. I like all three scores for the Daniel Craig ones. I have all the James Bond scores, but I really like Thomas Newman's score a lot. I am pissed that the Adele song is not included on the, and they make a point of saying the Adele song is not on the CD, but, I do think Thomas Newman should win because I love the score for The Good German. I don't like the movie, but I think it's a great score. I think he's a great, great composer.
Remember that year that he got he was nominated for in the same year he was nominated for Shawshank Redemption and for Little Women in the same year. Which, what an amazing year for somebody, because those are two of my absolute favorite scores.
My favorite Thomas Newman score is Meet Joe Black. That's, for me, the most gorgeous score, one of the most gorgeous I've ever heard. It's interesting, but I think that Michael Dana is favored for score.
We've interviewed him.
Of course. But what are the... There are categories that, more often than not, the Academy tends to screw up. Documentary's one.
Yes.
Song is another.
I don't think they fuck up song tonight. I think song will be fine. What do you think? You don't think Searching for Sugarman is going to win? Now, I haven't seen it, but you don't think that's going to win? You don't think that's
I'm hoping
gonna...
it'll win, and I think it's got a great shot because it's the one audience film among the five.
Let me ask you this. Is the Gatekeepers is nominated, right?
Yes.
I saw that on Friday. It's a very good movie. I don't see that win. I see Searching for Sugarman beating that. The Gatekeepers is a great movie. It represents my worldview, which is very disturbing. About Israel and about Judaism, but it's a very thought provoking film. But I don't see that winning. I just don't see that.
Talking heady? Is it
it's all talking heads, and there's a lot of archival footage. But it is one of the most honest films I've seen about this topic, which seems to be the central topic of our lives, unfortunately. But it's very well done. You don't notice the time go by. When it was over, I thought it went like that. But I would think Searching for Sugarman seems to be this movie that came out of nowhere. People have embraced it. It's come back. It's played in theaters. It did well. For a non-Michael Moore documentary, it did very well. I say give it to this one. This is the one that everyone's clamoring for.
I think so. And everybody wants to see him up on stage. What an amazing story it all is, for me, that's my fifth favorite movie of the year.
Is the one thing I have to say
was
about
mine
the Academy. They're not topical. The Oscars are never topical when they're supposed to be. So you could say, let's give it to the Invisible War is up 4-1-2, right?
Right.
Now, they're all important films. The Oscars do not work like that. The Oscars are always 2 or 3 years behind the curve on that.
Sometimes they are topical, like to hear that, Common Threads won for...
Michael Moore did win, but...
And then Michael Moore winning, and
this is the one movie out of the five that is not an issue movie, though.
Yeah, that's why I think it should win, because I think, first of all, I think Five Broken Cameras and the Gatekeepers sort of cancel themselves out, if you want to be honest, too. I think the Invisible War, while very important, I just don't know. And what's in the other one that's up for?
How to Survive the Plague.
Oh, well, now this.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, now that could, because that's another one where, I think if not for Searching for Sugarman, I think that would be the one to win. But I think Searching for Sugarman has all the momentum behind it.
Well, I'm just going back and taking a look at the winner of documentary features over the past few years. And, yes, last year we had Undefeated, which kind of stole.
And that was
thunder.
A surprise. I mean, because what was the favorited? It wasn't Undefeated.
Well,
it was something
Paradise Lost 3 or Pena. Pena,
I thought you said
Pena
for a second. Oh, yeah.
Well, I tried to say it. Pena, I guess, is how you
pronounce
it. So,
What won last year?
Undefeated.
Undefeated did win. Okay, all right. Well, all right.
But the year before, just to go back to, the whole thing of, they are on top of things, every other year. They're on top of what's going on. So, for instance, Inconvenient Truth won in 2006, and then Taxi to the Dark Side won next year. But then Man on Wire won, and then The Cove. But then there was, in 2010, there was Inside Job, so they were definitely on top of that. So,
A lot of people have been comparing Searching for Sugar Man with Man on Wire, and that it's inspiring, uplifting kind of
portrait. Yeah, absolutely.
So who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it'll win. I'd love it if it did, but I can very well see the Academy not. I can very well see them screwing it up.
Yeah.
I would be so disappointed. I would be so mad if that does not win. I will be crestfallen if that doesn't win.
Now, I know there are different opinions about this, on, amongst the three of us. But they haven't done it in a couple of years. And actually, my favorite creative choice in the past decade of the Oscars is the acting categories and having the five colleagues come up and pay tribute to each nominee. Do you think that they'll do that tonight? They've announced a lot of presenters.
It sure sounds like they're going to do that.
It sounds like they will. I thought they were going to do it. I've always thought it was just, it's just like giving a blowjob to each of them, personally. I think it's just like blowing smoke up each of their asses, personally. That's what I think of it. But I think they're going to do it.
It does give me a little bit of embarrassment watching it.
Are
they
going
to do it for supporting actor and actress, or just best
they
actor?
Usually, in history, they have, but they've done it for all four. But
I want. Who's going to do it for Sally Field? Because I want them to say, "No, we really don't like you. We hate you." I want someone to say that.
But it is. I've always just the image of seeing those five come out. Five legends. And they announced Friday that two legends are part of the ceremony tonight, Jack Nicholson and Dustin Hoffman. Nicholson hasn't been there in a couple of years, and he was Mr. Oscar, front row there.
Yeah, I know. He's got better things to do, but tonight, obviously, he doesn't. There's not a Lakers game, is there, tonight?
Jason believes that Nicholson and Hoffman are going to go up and announce Best Picture together. I would love it. Yeah, and that's more than a possibility.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I would love it if Nicholson and Hoffman got up to pay tribute to the actors together. I mean,
I can see Hoffman doing that for De Niro. I can see Hoffman doing it for De Niro. I don't know if I can see Nicholson doing that, though. It just doesn't seem like his bag.
Yeah, I agree. I sort of agree. But it would be interesting if he did. I definitely want to be watching if he does.
Sally Field and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are on the red carpet together, arm in arm. Sally Field is wearing red.
Is he going to go down on her or what?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt has such a goofy look on his face.
He's had such a great year, and he's got this directorial debut that comes out this year. I mean, he's loving life.
Yeah. But that's my fashion critique. Joseph Gordon-Levitt has a goofy look on his face. Catherine Zeta-Jones and Michael Douglas. Michael Douglas is currently the only actor that has won an Oscar for both producing and acting. George Clooney could meet that accomplishment tonight as well and be the second person in history.
Oh, wow.
Do so, yeah.
And by the way, I know that you posted that Clooney is also set a record in being the guy who's nominated in most categories. But I posted a little correction and said there's really another guy that he's tied with, and it's surprising, but it's Kenneth Branagh, because Branagh was nominated for acting and directing for Henry V, was nominated for supporting actress a year or two ago supporting actor for My Week with Marilyn, was nominated for adapting the screenplay to Hamlet. And then he was also nominated a few years ago as the producer of a short film. So he has been nominated in five different categories.
Yes, and the place where I got that stat actually brought up Branagh and explained how Clooney beats him. Branagh was nominated for live-action short. Let's see. This isn't the website, but they explain how I beat him. That's why I posted that stat.
Uh-huh.
I've got to find the website. This feat, okay. Anyway, I won't go through trying to read it now. Dustin Hoffman's there with his wife. He left the eight kids at home. He's got like 8 or 10 kids, like something crazy like that. Amanda Seyfried looks very heroin chic in her makeup.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jerry, you're supposed to be doing the fashion competition.
Well, I'm not near a TV that has E on, and you're talking about Amanda Seyfried and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I'm, of course, just making, like, lewd comments, because that's all I really know how to do at the end of the day is make lewd comments.
Oh, man.
Well, let me see what I can find. I'm going to see you. This is, of course, non-cable TV.
I'm looking
up
at
here.
It right now. So.
Oh, you are looking at it. That's good. I'm glad that you're on this, too. I'm going to try to find out where I can.
In these last
talk about weird
moments,
looking. Kristen Chenoweth is kind of strange.
in the last remaining moments, if any of our listeners out there, we currently have over 300 live listeners tuning in to us right now.
If anybody wants
to call in, the number is 718-508-9477. If you have any thoughts, last-minute predictions, what you'd like to see happen tonight in your wildest dreams. Talk about wildest dreams. If someone were to write in a winner, who would you want that to be in what category?
Oh, wow.
I'd like to see Ben Affleck just so it will piss Dean off.
well, you know, I've made my peace with the Ben Affleck winning. It's fine, you know. It does make me. You know, I posted something last night. I was talking about that because I was thinking about Ben Affleck winning and, you know, always do and everything like that. But here it is. Here it is also. Matthew McConaughey should be in the running for supporting actor. And nobody's talking about him being due, but he's. They appeared first in the same movie.
Oh,
that was a
snub. McConaughey was a snub, big time.
That's a big snub. I mean, that's a very big snub. All right, well, we have Jessica Chastain. Oh, see, that's a very. Whose dress is that?
I always like to say that every dress is by Vera Wang.
I'm not sure Vera Wang thanks you for that.
Actually, 459 live listeners.
Thank you.
Only 10 of them in the chat room. It's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if I didn't have to be in the chat room, I wouldn't be there. I'd be, all right, never mind. Who is this on ABC? Because I don't have cable up here. Is that Kristen Chenoweth?
Yes.
Is that who that is talking?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Wow. What kind of work has she had done? Okay. I'd fancy.
Oh my God!
Oh.
No, but she know, but she looks. Hey, they're doing better than we
will,
are. They're there. Okay.
She will be doing the closing number with Seth MacFarlane tonight to close the ceremony. That should happen about 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, we complain about the length, but I'm one of those guys. I'm a lot like Jason O'Brien in that I don't want it to end. And it's so weird because I look forward to the Oscars every year, and there's an enormous buildup, and then it just ends. And I was thinking about this in terms of our friend Austin Wintry, who was nominated for his Grammy Award.
Mm-hmm.
Just earlier this month, and it was so exciting, and there was so much build-up, and we interviewed him again, and, you know, we were talking back and forth, and build-up, and he took photos from the red carpet, and he's so excited, and then he doesn't win. It's over in a second.
Yeah.
You know, a year of build-up, a month of build-up, just like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, people compare it to like Super Bowl, but let's not forget this. The Super Bowl is the culmination of like 50 other football games that play every Sunday. There's only one Oscars. There's only one Oscar show, you know, and I don't really care that it goes on long. Maybe go for another hour. That's fine. It's fine. I don't care. You know, this is the one night of the year that I feel it's like it's for me. It's for not only for me, but for all movie fans. And I consider movie fans to be those ones that are just totally wrapped in attention and just totally watching, you know, every single move. You know, I don't care if it's sound effects editing or whatever it is. You know, you're right
on.
I
tape them, and I rewatch them a couple of times that week.
Well, Channing Tatum and his wife are on right now, and
she's pregnant.
You know, you want to talk about someone else who had a great year last year and is going into this year with a very is Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
You know, if you go work for Soderbergh, it ups your game. And Haywire, Magic Mike, and even something like The Vow, the non-Soderbergh, and into this year's Side Effects, and he's unless he's 21 Jump Street, he's very funny.
Yeah.
He also had a very good year last year. And, you know, that's not Matthew McConaughey. I mean, even something as outlandishly bad as The Paperboy, you can't take your eyes off it. It's so bad. It makes Precious look like a great movie.
But I can understand why he'd do it, because it's like he's looking at it and he's saying, okay, man, let's take a risk. And
I want to do this.
That movie is risk. I mean, you can either
total risk.
Think or swim with a movie like that.
You know, but you got to do that. And look, it's a train wreck of a movie, but it's
Killer
a lot
Joe
of fun to watch.
Killer Joe is a major risk as well, of the same order. He just happened to
swim. Yeah, but Killer Joe is brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
it really is brilliant.
Chicken leg the same way again, you know.
It is a great provocative movie, but it easily could have been a complete embarrassment.
Uh-huh. It could have been,
yeah.
But just the way that I think, I don't know how William Friedkin did that, but he just sort of like, I don't know where that came from within him, to make something that shit insane, but it's just like, oh my God, that was just great. And Matthew McConaughey's going to make, you know, we have this movie Mud coming out. And, you know, we're beginning to see what, you know, like in Dazed and Confused or Lone Star, what made him so great to begin with. We're seeing that in the last year and into this year. And I do think, you know, he will. He's got to get something.
So if you were to write, so to go back to this, if you were to write in a winner in one of these categories, it would be McConaughey for supporting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, either that or Paul Thomas Anderson for screenplay.
And Bruce Willis for supporting for Moonrise Kingdom. I'd have to. You cannot, you really can't rule out, even though he's just shit all over that last weekend. Looper and Moonrise Kingdom, just two back-to-back brilliant performances, but I would write him in for Moonrise Kingdom. I mean, and I'm just looking at this ad for Jack the Giant Slayer. I don't think anyone's going to be writing that shit in next year.
That's Bryan Singer, isn't it?
Yeah, what the hell? It looks awful.
The Bond, the celebration of 50 years of Bond, obviously it's going to include Shirley Bassey singing a song.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you think it will include?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I think they're going to show up. You know, I hope, like we were talking about, they all show up maybe, but I don't know if that's possible. I mean, you think they're going to dig up, you know, Shayna Easton and get her back? Carly Simon to sing, you know, Nobody Does It Better? Or how about Paul McCartney up there to sing, you know, Living My Daddy?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good point. I mean, are any of the Bonds going to be there, or is that going to be the big surprise?
That has been canned. That's not going to happen.
They have.
Oh my God, Amanda Seyfried. She looks like Aubrey Plaza's evil twin. Oh my God, she looks like she walked straight off the set of that movie, The Craft. Oh my God.
But they've said that the reunion of the actors isn't going to happen. But part of me was hopefully thinking they're just trying to throw us off. Because if they did try to bring in all the actors, they try to keep it top secret. Especially since the most difficult person to do that with would be Connery. That would be
Lazenby is probably there. Lazenby's probably there. He's staying at the.
He's been camping out in the bleachers for the past 40 years.
I know. Yeah, he's there. He's like saying, "Look, man, please let me in. Give me a drink." He's like, "Clooney, get me a drink, please."
I can only hope that they bring on Aha for the Bond trivia. That's what I hope happens. I want to hear a live version of the Living Daylights. That's what I want to hear. Well, it'll certainly include like a clip semblance and Shirley Bassey singing.
What's this box here, this cube? What is this that they have on the, you know, this thing that's covered up on the red carpet here that Amanda's
It's got Walt Disney's frozen head in it.
So I was going to say, was it Hitler's brain? Is that a prop in Hitler's brain?
Yeah.
I mean,
Disney has been nominated the 60th time tonight. His severed head will accept.
Well, there is a Disney thing. If Wreck-It Ralph wins, it'll be the first totally Disney movie to win that award for feature. And not only that, but the supposed winner of the short is Paper Man. So if Paper Man and Wreck-It Ralph win, they'll also be the first movies that were shown together at the theater.
That's true. I mean, I didn't get to see Wreck-It Ralph, and I do think that's going to win. And if not that, I'd like to see either Paranorman or Frankenweenie win, quite honestly. But I do think Wreck-It Ralph seems to be right. If Brave wins, I think that would be a travesty because Brave just doesn't work. Brave seems like a retread, seems like a lesser version. How do I say this? And how to Train Your Dragon. It really has that feel to it. And that was, I think, a far superior film.
One other stat about actors at the Oscars. Silver Linings Playbook is nominated for all four major awards. That's only been done a few times in the history of the Academy, but only two movies have won three major acting awards. No movie has ever won all four.
Right. So you got Network, of course, in 76, winning actor or actress and supporting actress. And then you have Streetcar Named Desire, right, for actress, supporting actress, and supporting actor, right?
I have no idea. I would think you were, or do you want, or should we phone Jason O'Brien and ask him?
That's it. That's the winner. Those are the winners. Is Jamie still on with us? Should we do Jamie somehow?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I think it's just us.
All
right. Great. I don't have the switchboard. I have no idea what the hell is going on.
I'm here. I had to call back.
Okay.
Did I get cut off?
Yeah. We couldn't. Yeah, we were wondering what happened to you. So
okay. It dropped
suddenly,
my call.
Suddenly,
okay, I don't know how much you guys heard.
Okay.
The only films to win three acting Oscars are Network and Streetcar Named Desire. No film has won all four. Now,
right.
Silver Linings is nominated in all four categories. It has a good shot at winning two of them, a very outside chance of winning three. There's no way it'll win four. Jackie Weaver hasn't really been in the conversation here.
No, she hasn't, and I would think that she would have, if she was going to win, she would have won for Animal Kingdom. That would have been the, I don't see that, I mean, she's very good in the movie, I just don't see it happening. Mm-hmm. By the way, are they talking about costumes right now? Because, you know,
yeah,
I just saw them. I just saw them flash up too, like photos from Clockwork Orange. I was like, oh wow,
they're showing
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, they're showing pictures of Edith Head.
Right.
So they must be talking about Carson.
Is Monique there? Is Monique at the Oscars?
Speaking of Edith Head, no,
yeah.
I don't know.
What is Monique doing these days? Are they making Soul Plane too? I mean, what?
Not Eat Ahead, Jerry. Edith.
I said, yeah. Very funny, Mr. Duval. Very funny, Mr. Duval. You're so funny. God. No, I was just wondering, because she's won an Oscar, too.
Right.
That's
well,
strange.
She presented last year, right? Yeah.
Yes, I guess she's not going to be there this year. Okay. Yes, I mean, this year it'll be Octavia Spencer and I guess Streep and Dujardin and whoever won Best Supporting Actor last year.
So,
Jerry, a great show. We're just a great show. We don't know who won Best Supporting Actor last year. Who won it? I forgot.
I don't remember either. Christopher Plummer.
Damn, and he deserved it. Long, talk about someone who's long overdue.
He's currently the oldest winner, but Emmanuel Riva can beat him tonight. So
yes,
in that stat. Okay, Jerry, here's a trivia question for you. Jack Nicholson and Barbara Streisand are both on the Oscars tonight. What movie did they star in together?
Oh, I saw this. I didn't bother looking at the answers because someone put Transformers in the as the answer, but I don't know the movie they were in. Yentl, The Lonely Years.
No, that was On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, right?
Yeah. Which on
wow.
A Clear Day You Can See Forever marked the first time that Nicholson met Robert Evans. And Robert Evans.
Well, that's a momentous meeting right there.
Robert
wow.
Evans wanted to hire him for that film, and Nicholson said, thank you. He said, can I actually have another $25,000 for it because I have alimony payments? And Robert Evans liked his balls in asking that question because here's his first big break. That's what he's giving him. Yeah.
But that's Nicholson. That's Nicholson.
Yeah.
He has balls. I mean, that's what's so awesome about him. I mean,
that's funny. I wonder if he said it just kind of funny, kind of, or did he just take him aside to
He took him aside. He was serious about it, yeah.
Can you imagine if he took the part of Han Solo in Star Wars and he would have said, look, George, you can write this, but there's no way I'm saying this.
I mean, Robert Evans has some good observations in this interview I read with him years ago. Robert Evans said, you know, the guy Pacino at the premiere of The Godfather. Here's the biggest night of his life up to that point. Pacino. Robert Evans sees him at the hotel at the premiere, or whatever. He has to borrow money from Robert Evans for cab fare to get back home. Like he's flat broke.
Right. Wow.
You know, isn't that amazing?
Oh my God.
It's great.
Michael Corleone. Wow.
Hollywood Noir, man.
Wow, yeah.
He ain't borrowing cab fare from anyone anymore.
No, I don't think so.
He's
what
taking that
this?
Cab fare and snorting cocaine with it. That's what Pacino said. Anyway. So, we'll be live tweeting the Oscars all night. Our Twitter handle is Movie Geeks Unite, so we'll be doing Oscar trivia, and I'll post observations about the awards and that kind of stuff. I'm sure it'll be a busy night on Twitter for the Oscars. And the Oscars are actually, I mean, the Oscars have really opened up social media, and the behind-the-scenes cameras that live stream during the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for the first time, I think they're making clips from tonight's Oscars available right on the heels of these moments actually happening.
Yeah, yeah, I read that. Interesting.
Yeah. So that's interesting. We'll try to post some of those, some of those too. So Ted is going to make an appearance tonight too, guys.
I'm sorry, who was that? Who was that?
Ted, you know, Ted.
Oh, Teddy thank bear. God. I mean, everyone loves a pot-smoking teddy bear. That's awesome.
You think he'll be carrying a bong on stage?
No, they can't do that, right?
Yeah.
Wait, Cheech and Chong are coming too? Wow, okay.
So we'll have that to look forward to. But the thing that I worry about
always,
is...
those moments are always kind of embarrassing to me, too, yeah. When they have, like, an animated character up there, you know, and the person has to act, you know, with them. I don't know.
It's that's always very challenging. Maybe that's what they'll have Nicholson be doing. So Nicholson needs to get really high before tonight's show because he's going to be presenting with an imaginary teddy bear.
The image of Jack Nicholson getting high with Ted backstage is just hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh man, that would be awesome. I mean, well, that whole book, that book Jack's Life that came out in the 90s, I mean, that could have been easily just subtitled The History of Cocaine in Hollywood in the 70s.
Nicholson is the greatest. I love hearing those stories where Nicholson used to, like, his ex-lovers would, like, come forward and they'd say, yeah, I remember Jack chasing me around the house in a pair of shorts and tube socks and a ping-pong paddle. And you're like, you know, Jack moves
someone
like that.
Dude, that's the movie
Jack
I want to... Okay, all right, let's, you know, we're in 20, 30 years, if they're still making movies or whatever, if we're still here, if the asteroid doesn't pass through the keyhole and we're still here, who's going to play Jack Nicholson in these biopics? No, seriously, they're going to make all these movies. I mean, we got My Week with Marilyn last year, and then we get all these other movies. You got these two atrocious Hitchcock films. Who's going to play Nicholson? Who's going to play Pacino?
Who's going to play Robert Evans? There is going to be some opportunity probably for somebody to play Nicholson, whether it's like, you know, movie about the making of a movie or whatever, since he's been in so many iconic ones.
Yeah, right. It ain't going to be Christian Slater because I don't think he's going to be there. I don't think he'll be here. But, who's it going to be?
No, nobody can match that amount of charisma. I mean, just,
yeah, I mean,
nobody's got it. Yeah.
I don't think
if anybody that we know, like right now, it's like somebody who's maybe 10 or 12 years old right now.
he really is the gold standard, though, in a lot of ways. But in terms of have to get or dying to talk to, dying to interview people, Jack Nicholson is at the top. And he won't
That's a 5-hour show, but he won't do it. I mean, there's so much. I mean, you could just do, you would have to have not Movie Geeks United, but we would have to have different channels. You would have to have the Jack Nicholson channel. I mean, dude, this is stories that man has to tell.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I mean,
out of all the
But he won't
people,
do it. He won't do it, though. I don't see him doing that, though.
He won't do any shows, no. He doesn't like appearing on TV. He'll do radio every now and then. You know, but he did some radio for the Bucket List.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow. I'm surprised he went that far. That's what makes that movie Corman's World that came out a couple of years ago so interesting, because it does include a pretty revealing interview, an emotional interview with Jack Nicholson, which is something that we don't get a chance to see very often. So.
Mm-hmm. Naomi Watts is on the red carpet with her husband, as Jerry likes to call him, Liv Scribner.
Liv Scribner, baby. Wait, that's her husband?
Yeah.
Wait, is that the ape? Is that Kong? I thought she was married to Kong. What the fuck? She's married to that much?
No, they've been married
for a long
time. They've been married for a long time.
I know, I'm joking, but really? Him? He's the Gregory Peck of our generation. But
because of The Omen? Yeah.
Yeah.
Naomi Watts doesn't have much of a shot, right?
No, she doesn't. She's very good in the movie, but it's just the movie doesn't have. I don't. That would be. Oh my God! If she wins, Oh my God! I mean,
well, yeah. I mean, she's out of the five nominees. She's the one that's not really in the conversation.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a great performance. Don't get me wrong, but I just don't. That would be upset of upsets. That would be like the people like saying we were really pulling for you with the ring. You know.
What is the greatest upset you guys have seen in Oscar history?
Crash winning. You know, it has to be Crash. You know, that was the thing.
I would say Crash. Even though I don't really, you know, I do remember it's the whole Saving Private Ryan and Shakespeare Love. That was, I mean, and not that I begrudge, look, I don't begrudge, you know, either way, you know, and I don't
but
even
begrudge.
But
they were kind of talking about Shakespeare in Love maybe coming in there, you know.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, and that movie has a lot of fans. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, I liked it too. I haven't seen it since it came out in theaters, but look, I liked it too. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't even begrudge Crash, because Crash has a lot of fans. It's a very popular movie, and I don't know where it stands. I haven't seen it since it's come out. It's been like seven or eight years.
It's interesting you could feel when they announced Crash, you could feel the shock.
It was Nicholson who announced it, right?
Yeah, because everyone thought it was going to Brokeback Mountain, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, everyone thought that it would be Brokeback Mountain. And I
Paul Haggis even said, look, it should have gone to Brokeback Mountain. You know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the big acting upset, I think, at least as far as in my memory right now, was Adrian Brody winning.
Yeah. And that was, for me, that was the most delightful surprise.
Oh, yeah.
Of recent years, because no one really expected it, and you could tell, and I was telling this to Dean the other night, you could tell when everyone stood up and cheered for him, including his fellow nominees, that they were genuinely, like, thrilled for him. And it's one of those moments at the Oscars that Oscar fans live for, because it's a moment of pure joy.
Yeah,
you know,
it is. And everyone, you know, in that town, everyone was pulling for him. In that sense, but look, the biggest surprise then for going that year is Polanski. I didn't think Polanski was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
Did anyone
think that Polanski was going to win? I mean, you know, he can't show up to get the award. I mean,
and even, you know, to show how ever gracious Scorsese is. I mean, Scorsese was up against Polanski for, you know, his dream project for like 20 years, The Gangs of New York.
Mm-hmm.
So people are saying, oh, Scorsese's got this. He's going to win, just because it's time for Scorsese to win finally. And when Polanski was announced, he got up, he gave a standing ovation and clapped, and then he sat back down and he told the person next to him, said, Polanski has influenced me so much. I mean, he's done a lot for me in terms of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he was genuinely happy that Polanski got recognition.
Well, I have to admit, I was too. That was my favorite upset. You know,
You could really not begrudge Polanski that, because that was a truly really great movie, and he went on to make another great movie after that, The Ghost Rider. So I don't really see him. You know, it's really interesting. He's a guy who can't come back here, and he's making great movies still. I mean,
wouldn't
amazing.
That be a moment though if he came back for an Oscars? I mean, it can't happen, but that would be something else.
That would be a big
moment. That would be incredible.
That would be like Charlie Chaplin when he came back for the Oscars.
Yeah,
I'll tell you my biggest surprise. My biggest surprise of any show ever was after 9/11 and Woody Allen coming out on stage and doing a monologue.
Oh yeah. How the hell did they
get that? That was I almost fainted.
and a genuinely funny monologue too. I mean, he was and he would never show up for any of his nominations.
Yeah.
But they convinced him to do a love letter to New York that year.
And he loves New York, so that was a really surprise, cuz you would growing up, you would never have expected that. Never.
Yeah.
Not in a million years.
Or as he calls it,
you've I've been watching the Oscars since probably 1974, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And have been a Woody Allen fan since that time as well. And you know, especially in 1977, you know, with him winning the big award. You know, that's when I learned, you know, that he was never going to show to an Oscar. thing.
Right.
And I just, you know, over the years just accepted it and said, well, he's never going to be there. And then, but that moment, I'll tell you, that was my biggest jaw-dropping moment.
Yeah.
I could not even believe it.
So, predict for me, what will be the best moment tonight?
Well, I think everybody's going to be talking about Adele, frankly. I think that's
going to
be...
Yeah, I think Adele... I think, I mean, I think it might be all Bond-related stuff, maybe. You know, and rightfully so. I mean, but I honestly don't know. I don't know what will be the best moment because this is such an unpredictable show in one sense. Yeah.
If Tarantino wins, that could be something really, really interesting, too.
You guys, everyone seems to be dead set against that, though. Everyone seems to think, I mean, Zero Dark Thirty is like all of a sudden become, that's where they're going to, I mean, I think we even talked about this last week. That seems to be, it's going to get the original screenplay. I mean,
you know,
I was torn.
I was torn because when I did Jason's show the other night, I predicted Zero Dark Thirty. And then for my predictions in my office pool this weekend, I changed it to Django.
Oh, I think Django should get it, and it's not Django, Moonrise Kingdom, but I just see Zero Dark Thirty. That would be a major upset because, you know, he didn't get the directing nod, so at least give him the screenplay nomination because you wouldn't have a film without him. You sort of need Tarantino to make the whole thing because no one makes a film like that. No one else really manages to put everything in the goddamn Cuisinart and make something like that. So
our movie geek Chris just posted Life of Pi was his favorite movie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But he liked Argo, Django, Silver Linings, and Zero Dark Thirty quite a bit too. He said he'd be happy with any of these movies being Best Picture. Anything but that stinking, unwatchable art fart Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Oh, yeah, I figured he would go there. I wouldn't mind seeing that win, but that's never going to happen.
No.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about that, Chris. It's just not
going to
happen.
Well, I look forward to surprises. You know, it's the human moments that take me in, and most people in, more than the spectacle. So I'm hoping for a surprise presenter to be like one of the best moments of the night.
Mm-hmm.
This show tonight is actually produced by the executive producers of Smash, the NBC musical, which has completely tanked in its second season. That explains why it's going to be heavy on the music. They said if the show has a theme, it is celebrating music in the movies.
Mm.
So let's hope Rob Lowe and Snow White don't duet on Proud Mary, keeping with that theme.
He has that great movie song, Proud Mary. How did they do that?
Did you read that article at Hollywood Reporter that actually found the girl that played Snow White?
I read that was available. I still haven't read it, though.
It's a funny, tragic story. I mean, she was kind of plucked to do this, and she knew that it was going to be a career ender. I mean, it felt like a terrible idea from the very start. And that is kind of the most infamously, embarrassing moment in Oscar history.
Well, it really changed Oscar ceremonies from then on, really. I mean, it also ended the career of that year's producer, Alan Carr. He never really recovered from that and ended up passing away, not more than a decade after that happened. But, that's when all the forces were rallied and they said, okay, this can never happen again. We've got to make this into, we've got to whip this show into shape. And they pretty much have, you know. I mean, there's that great book called The Big Show by Steve Pond, you know, that really goes
through
the machinations of every year, you know, and talks specifically about the show itself, not about the nominees or anything, but just the show itself and the producing of the show and so forth. That's a really terrific book, but Yeah, I mean, it's very clear from that, from, you know, that instance with Rob Lowe and Snow White. That, you know,
and I was just thinking of another great moment, a great moment from a previous year. It was the year that they brought on all the winners, like almost 100 of the
Oscars. That's right.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love it whenever they've done it like once again, but it was really great that one time, that first time that they did it, where they had all 100 of them up there.
Oh yeah,
that was just unbelievable.
De Niro's there with his wife, looking sharp, wearing glasses. De Niro is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So let's see if a tearful performance on Katie Couric translates into Oscar votes. It very well could. I know that De Niro, you know, it's a very personal performance for De Niro because he has an older son with autism, and I think that's how he connects to Silver Linings in a very personal way. So, God bless him. I'm glad he found something personal.
Definitely.
Before he went back to doing stupid comedies, that's good.
Well, he is fantastic in that movie, and that is what he's got on the board right now. It's just he's got the two comedies, right? He's got Las Vegas with.
Yeah,
it's coming out, and then I guess the whatever that Stallone thing. I guess it has to be a comedy, right?
And God willing, he goes into doing the Scorsese movies soon because he says he wants to do two more movies with Scorsese so they can do an even 10 together. The talk is of doing The Irishman next, which would be a mob movie with De Niro and Pacino as Jimmy Hoffa, and then Joe Pesci. All in a Scorsese movie together. That would be a dream.
My God.
Yeah.
That's got to be fast-tracked immediately. Forget
I
about
know.
The pilot. Forget about Sinatra. Put those on the back burner. Please go to the Irishman.
Yes.
Sounds good to me. Let's do the Irishman. Let's do it. Let's get it going.
Absolutely. Okay, twitter.com/MovieGeeksUnite. That's where you'll find updates all night on the Oscars. All right, guys. I appreciate
right,
you guys
awesome
enjoying
show.
The awards.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. Thank you to everyone who listened to us tonight. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, our live listeners, total 929 so far for the show. So all 929
awesome.
Of you, thank you for tuning in.
Great.
And we will see you Wednesday. We'll do our post show on the Oscars.
Sounds good.
Talk about our thoughts on the ceremony. And I'm looking forward to it. This is like the holiday for me every year.
Yeah, it is. My heart's racing right now. As the minutes pass by, my heart just is starting to race now.
Yeah, it's great. It's terrific. Okay, we're going to close off tonight with Hans Zimmer's Academy Awards theme. So thank you, guys. I'll see you Wednesday.
All right.
All right.
Good night. Enjoy,
thanks,
everyone.
Everybody.